Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of GF Investment Services, LLC are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent the views of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments based off of Richard Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener and the investor.
And a very good morning to you all, ladies and gentlemen. This is Richard Martin from Singapore in this hot and sultry and inviting evening. It is Monday, May the 14th, and you are listening to the Wake Up Call. Well, when you look at Europe right now, you're seeing an example of the addict and the enabler playing out before your eyes. The European Union wanted to broaden its membership and show off, so it brought in Greece. Everybody knew at the time that Greece's books were fraudulent and that it was already in violation of the Maastricht Treaty. Everybody also knew that once under the EU umbrella, Greece would be able to pay a lot less for funds and that they would obviously take advantage of cheap rates by borrowing. Life became easy, debts ballooned, and Greece's economy lost its ability, even its need, to function. It became an entitlement state. Events thereafter were painfully predictable. The banks offered more candy, and the Greeks, at both public and private levels, fed their growing addiction to the sweet life. When banks could no longer even pretend that Greece or Greeks would repay, they turned off the spigot and just made a shell game of any new Greek borrowings, moving them from the EU or the ECB directly into creditor banks. But you see, the addiction is still there. The functioning Greek economy is not. The choice is another fix for which Greece cannot pay, or money withdrawal, cold turkey, and a slow rebuilding of a functioning state. I'm not so sure Greece will be bailed out again, despite last week's rumors about a more relaxed deal. Ireland isn't looking so good, and neither is Spain. Saturday's Indignantes protested in Spain was aimed partially at the recent bank bailout, which means Rajoy isn't fooling anybody. Both countries are likely to need additional help, and both are more significant to the European Union than Greece. Spain is huge, with a banking system 90% the size of Italy and nearly half the size of France and Germany. It is 10 times larger than what remains of Greece's banking system. The European Union might go through some motions and pretend to apply additional bandages to Greece so that false hopes for Spain emerge. That will buy time for the European Union to do its best to immunize itself against another Greece default and an exit from the zone while saving ammunition for Spain and Ireland. Greece might also serve as the poster child for what happens to members who react negatively at EU leadership. There are limits to how much money can be printed before faith wavers. We may already have reached that point, which is why Draghi, the head of the European Central Bank, continually lies about how LTRO, that's a long-term operation to give credit and bailouts, how it isn't printing, as he says. I think they know they're up against it and have to be somewhat more judicious in the use of the inkjet machine. Frankly, they've done a good job so far of orchestrating an orderly decline in the value of the euro, even against gold. The European Union can survive a Greek exit if it takes the time now to backstop Spain and to a lesser extent Portugal. The main fear is dealing with a bank run prompted by news coverage of Greeks being forced from euro deposits to the new drachma. An equally large but less visible problem will be dealing with cross-border debts that remain current, that is, can Greek private and corporate borrowers pay back in drachmas, totaling, by some accounts, half a trillion euros? This would obviously lead to an official and a black market rate. The transfer of debts from euros to drachmas is less visible to the masses. They don't see this as a priority, and it's unlikely to cause bank runs in Spain or Portugal. The European Union cannot survive a Spanish exit, because that particular falling domino strikes Italy, which strikes France, which basically starts continent-wide contagion. I want you to imagine that the US was Greece, and that I'd been warning you to leave Greece for years. My broadcast to you as Greeks would be that you should now already be out of that country by now. If you're still living there, I don't know what to suggest to you. Now, of course, I haven't been talking to Greeks on a bi-weekly radio show, but I can tell you what you're seeing in Greece is exactly what I predict for the United States in the not-so-distant future. Look very carefully at Greece. Study the internal details of the horror that is the Greek economy right now. If you think you could weather that, and their problems, by the way, will continue for decades, by all means, stay in the United States and endure the consequences. I don't think many people will be too pleased to do that, though. Just a thought, my friends. Just a thought. All right. Here's my information. The toll-free number remains, as always, 888-874-4888. Please feel free to use it. It is there for you at all times, not just for my show, but for every show that PRN offers you. You have the same number. It is used more frequently in some shows than others, but if you wish to up the ante in our show, please feel free to call 888-874-4888. If you would rather send an email, please continue to let them come. They come thick and fast to rm@gfawd.com. Once more, that's rm for Richard Martin at gfawd for Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design, gfawd.com. Let me read that once more for those of you still frantically searching for a pen. It is rm@gfawd.com. And finally, my personal direct line in Sarasota, Florida, which wings its merry way across to Singapore at no charge to your good selves. Well, there is a charge. There's a toll charge to Sarasota, Florida, but that number is area code 941-441-1682. Again, the number to reach me direct in Singapore, call me anytime during the day or the night. Leave a name and a phone number. If I'm not there, I will call you back speedily. It is area code 941-441-1682. All right, ladies and gentlemen, now is the time to think furiously about your plans for next Sunday, May the 20th at 2 p.m. That will be the Richard Martin Meetup Group, and it will be taking place, as always, in New Brunswick, New Jersey, at the George Street Ale House, which is to be found at 378 George Street, which is very close to the railroad station. So, ladies and gentlemen, you have a choice. You may take your motorized conveyance and park it easily on a Sunday afternoon in or around George Street, or you may take a train to New Brunswick and alight from same and walk up George Street to the George Street Ale House. Again, that is next Sunday, May the 20th at 2 p.m. And the purpose of this meetup group is really to give you an idea, give you moral support and any other support we can possibly lay our hands on to allow you to emigrate, to leave the United States and find a life which is more comely and more agreeable in other climes during what I think will be the worst depression the world has ever experienced. And if you want some idea of what it's like, please be my guest. Read up about Greece today. It is a horror story incarnate, and you will not want to think that this could happen to the United States. I fear, however, that that is your future, ladies and gentlemen. It is writ stark on the face of Greece today. And I am not kidding. The Greece stock market is down by 90%, which is a projection that I have made for the U.S. market. I think it will happen. And I think that when it gets there, ladies and gentlemen, few of you will want to be in the United States at that point. I cannot tell you how strongly I feel about this. Every single talk I give here on the wake-up call gives you yet more grist for the mill. I shall not shirk from my duty today either. I have plenty to tell you about which will shake your bones, ladies and gentlemen, and I am not kidding. Well, okay. And by the way, please call Jack Chavesta, who will be our moderator for both May and June in Susan's absence. Jack's number is area code 914-414-6940. I would urge you please to give him a call. He will give you information about what's being mooted for your session next Sunday. It is to do with how to learn a foreign language. And Jack has some interesting ideas. He is trying to hook up with an interesting person for you to talk to, who is engaged in teaching English in South Korea, an American who emigrated some time ago. And he is going to hopefully have somebody maybe even to talk to you in person. His number again is 914-414-6940. That is Jack, who would like to hear from you to get numbers for the restaurant that is on the 20th, that's next Sunday at 2 p.m. Okay, well, Jeff Nelson came up with a charming little story entitled The Mythical Land of Us. I'm sure us will not be difficult for you to translate into a more immediate analogy, but us it is. Here goes. If ever we needed proof of the saturation level brainwashing to which the Western masses are now subjected, and to which they have succumbed, there is no clearer evidence than the U.S. Treasuries market. The U.S. economy has never been less solvent in its entire history, meaning that U.S. treasuries have never been less valuable. The new supply of U.S. treasuries grossly exceeds any level of paper the United States has ever pumped into global markets before, meaning that treasuries have never been less valuable. And yet we see alleged buyers being permanently willing to pay by far the highest prices in history for these mountainous stacks of paper. However, this is just the beginning of the absurdity here. We're told that the U.S. government can continue to obtain these record prices despite the fact that the two largest buyers of treasuries over the past decade, China and Japan, have virtually stopped buying. Indeed, for more than a year, China has been a net seller of treasuries. This collapse in demand also implies the lowest rather than the highest prices in history for U.S. treasuries. Amazingly, we have now journeyed beyond absurdity, with U.S. Treasury's interest rates having literally dipped into negative numbers on several occasions already. Absurdity becomes insanity. Buyers supposedly paying for the privilege of lending money to the U.S. government. Under the best of circumstances, this would be perverse and insane. Borrowers do not get to charge lenders interest when they borrow their money. Indeed, the simple fact that this point even needs to be made to an adult audience is proof of how the saturation propaganda has effectively rendered the majority brain dead. Lenders do not pay interest to borrowers when they lend them money. This is a tautology of commerce which is true under the best of circumstances. However, we are far from the best of circumstances. The United States has never been less solvent, meaning its bonds have never been worth less. Worth less? And now we have the ultimate insanity. We have the Treasury Department announcing it is formally structuring its bond auctions to make it easier for so-called buyers to pay negative interest rates, i.e. pay the U.S. government in order to be allowed to lend it their money. The king of deadbeats, the most insolvent nation in all of history, has announced that it is now expecting lenders to line up in order to be allowed to pay the U.S. government for the privilege of lending money to it. In short, the U.S. Treasury's market is already totally perverse. There is not even a hypothetical universe we could construct where this would be a rational, legitimate market. The only parallel I can think of is a fable I heard long ago about the mythical land of Us. The land of Us was a rather dreary place. It was composed entirely of two groups, a small number of rich hogs and a huge herd of poor sheep. Inexplicably, it was the sheep themselves who always chose the hogs to rule over them. The land of Us became such a dreary place entirely because of its golden rule, one of the first laws created by the hogs, namely, all of the sacrifices will be bestowed upon the sheep, and all of the privileges will be imposed on the hogs. The sheep agreed that this seemed like a very equitable division. Did I mention that the sheep weren't very bright? However, even the fat hogs weren't smiling these days, as the land of Us had a very serious problem. It was deeply, deeply in debt. In fact, hopelessly insolvent. Worse still, there were practically no revenues coming into the hogs' coffers. The sheep had nothing left to tax. Well, naturally, the hogs paid no taxes, as per the division between sacrifices and privileges. An emergency council of the hogs was convened to discuss this crisis. "Fellow hogs," addressed Boss Hog, "we cannot continue things this way any longer. We are already deeply in debt to neighboring lands, and worse still, the great trough is nearly empty." Grunts of shock and horror reverberated amongst the swine. "Let us raise taxes on the sheep," sneered one of the fatter hogs, echoed with many grunts of approval. "That won't work," replied Boss Hog. "We've already squeezed the sheep dry." "We could start paying taxes ourselves," suggested one of the younger finger hogs naively. Raucous laughter erupted throughout the council. "Seriously, though," continued Boss Hog, wiping away a few tears, "something must be done." "We'll just have to borrow a lot more money," concluded one of the hogs, with most of the other hogs nodding in agreement. "We can't," countered Boss Hog. "The other countries can see that Us is insolvent, and no one will lend us any more money at these interest rates." "Then we'll just have to increase interest rates to attract more capital," reasoned yet another hog. "We can't do that either," stated Boss Hog dejectedly. "With current revenues, we can't even afford to pay the interest on all our old debts. Indeed, we need to find some way to lower our interest payments, or we'll soon be bankrupted by our old debts alone." "What if we just printed up a huge new stack of piglets and used all those piglets to buy our bonds?" suggested another hog hopefully. The piglet, by the way, was the official paper currency unit of the hogs. Then we could set marginal interest rates to any number we wanted because we would be selling to ourselves. That still won't work, declared Boss Hogg. Once the other nations saw us printing those trillions of piglets and diluting the currency, they would quickly start dumping the trillions in piglet-denominated bonds they're already holding. The piglet would quickly become worthless. I have a plan, asserted a particularly sly-looking hog. We simply won't tell the other nations that they're printing more piglets to buy our own bonds. In other words, we'll counterfeit our own currency. And so they can't see what we're doing. First, we'll change the procedure on our bond auctions to make them totally opaque, so that no one can see who is buying the bonds. This way, we can not only claim there are foreign buyers for all the bonds, but we can also set interest rates to any fantasy number we like. Not even the sheep are stupid enough to fall for a ruse that clumsy, scoffed Boss Hogg. Oh, I think I have just the right hog for the job, grinned the sly hog. A cacophony of eagle laughter begins building in the council. B.S. Banker strode up to the bond auction podium. He was particularly impressive-looking as a hog, wearing a pointed magician's hat and carrying a glittering magic wand. He gazed into the vacuous stares of the sheep assembled before him. "Behold, as I perform great feats of magic," proclaimed B.S. Banker, gesturing dramatically with his wand. "Observe the ordinary table on my left, with a large stack of piglet bonds piled atop it. Indeed, it is the largest stack of piglet bonds in history." Murmurs of nervousness and shock are heard among the sheep audience. "Now gaze in wonder as I make that entire stack of piglet bonds disappear. And at the highest prices in history," thunders B.S. Banker, as the sheep audience gasps in awe. The lights are then suddenly turned off, and the auction chamber is plunged into darkness for 10 minutes. Muffled sounds are heard, somewhat like a printing press being operated at maximum speed. The lights go back on. "And presto," declares B.S. Banker triumphantly, "the piglet bonds have all disappeared." He points to a tabletop which is now void of any paper. The sheep exploded into wild applause, and the funding problem for the land of us was solved. The hogs lived happily ever after. Of course, the land of us could never exist, because there could never be a herd as stupid as the sheep. Just keep telling yourself that each and every time you hear the words highest prices in history and maximum supply used in the same sentence with respect to a treasury's auction. Yes, obviously, official U.S. treasury's auctions cannot be nothing more than a Machiavellian scheme to launder counterfeited currency. Oh, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Nice one. All right, so Susan sent me this email over the weekend, and I asked her if I could discuss it on the show, and she agreed, but asked me not to bring her family name into the discussion. So here is the email. "Why such a big jump over the past 3 years? On Friday evening, a cousin took me on a night tour of some neighborhoods in northwestern D.C. that used to be a little ragged and populated by mostly Latinos and African Americans. Now those neighborhoods are full of white yuppies, posh restaurants, doggy daycares, and the like. The restaurants and bars are doing a brisk business. I am beginning to believe that the powers that be may be able to pull one or two bubbles out of a hat to keep this party going for another 10 years. It looks like the stock market is the latest bubble. I read somewhere last week that someone who should know, Warren Buffett, maybe said that the stock market was undervalued. Of course, if a dollar used to be worth $1 in the 1970s and is now worth only 35 cents, the dollar will then be worth a mere 5 cents. It will have lost 95% of its value. I guess it will be a sovereign debt crisis that sets off a downturn. It probably won't be a big bang, but a bunch of little ones. My cousin told me that if he were in my situation, knowing that my current position will be eliminated in about 1 year, that I have no retirement plan, he would start looking for another job now and invest as much as possible in the stock market. He says he's doing very well in it. Regards, Susan. Well, Susan, I'm so glad you did write in. I really appreciate it when people disagree with me or have questions, serious questions, in a contrary context, involved with things that I may have said or strategies or beliefs that I may have hold. The answer to your question overall is actually very simple, Susan. Washington, D.C. happens to be the beneficiary of all yours and everyone else's tax money. That's what taxes are for, to feed Washington, D.C. And so Washington's having quite a party right now because of it. And quite frankly, I do think it will all come to an end, because what really is going to happen and what's happening in California, and I'm going to tell you about that in a few minutes, is that the services rendered by the federal government are going to be drastically curtailed, because when we reach the El Cliffo, the fiscal cliff, I think this time they're not going to be able to extend the cuts. And when they make those cuts, Susan, that's going to be a tremendous hit on Washington, D.C., and that's going to be its own nemesis. And there are a couple of other places in the United States where there are pockets of good feeling in real estate and other areas, one of them, of course, being Manhattan, which is the seat of Wall Street. And Wall Street looks right now as though it's taking it on the chin. And I assure you that when Wall Street really goes down in earnest, Manhattan will be a wasteland. If you think that there are boarded up shops on Madison Avenue right now, you wait till you see Wall Street come down. Already there's talk of massive firings on Wall Street, and that's only going to get worse as Wall Street really implodes, not only in volume as it has done over the last few months, but in price as well. It will be a wasteland for many, many years to come. And Manhattan's turn in the black hole of real estate will be upon us very, very soon, if it hasn't already happened. So, Susan, along with Manhattan and some areas in Texas, which have been the beneficiaries of the recent run-up in the oil price, maybe a couple of isolated areas in California as well, I can assure you that all these will join the merry crowd of depression in short order, and D.C. will not be allowed to escape the coming debacle. So it will be, I think, not a big bang, as you say. I think it will be simply the implosion of the real estate market based on the loss of jobs in all these different places, the huge loss of employment that is coming the way of D.C. and other areas, and that, I think, will take care of the problem of the yuppies who are living it up in the restaurants and the nightclubs of today. And, of course, you don't have to consider that the dollar is necessarily going to lose value in all this. I do think that the dollar will continue to gain value. The dollar is doing very well right now, as many of you may have noticed. I think this will continue. I think that other currencies will continue to decline against the dollar. Whoever could possibly be buying euros, given the situation in Europe right now, I'd really like to talk to them to know what's going on in their minds, because, quite frankly, it must be an interesting story. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I think we will stop there right now. We will take our break, and I will be back with more on California in just a jiffy. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the other day I spoke about the parlous state of California. I didn't expect to be giving you an update a few weeks later. But the fact is, if you lived in California, things just got a whole lot worse. Governor Brown has announced that the state budget deficit for this year is going to be much larger than projected, that more government services are going to be cut, and that voters are going to vote on another round of tax increases in November.
Give me a break.
Meanwhile, unemployment is sitting at 11%, and extended federal unemployment benefits for workers in the state are ending. Because California is one of the worst places in the nation to conduct business, there has been a steady flow of companies leaving the state. Those companies have taken a whole lot of good jobs with them. Due to the lack of jobs and the steady stream of impoverished immigrants coming in from Mexico and other countries, poverty in the state has exploded and crime is rapidly increasing. California may be the land of endless sunshine, but for the California economy, there are only dark clouds on the horizon. The state is coming apart at the seams, and there's not much hope that things are going to turn around anytime soon. These days, California is very similar to Greece in many ways. Just like Greece, California has had round after round of austerity, and yet still cannot seem to balance the budget. Even after all the cuts that have been implemented in recent years, the California budget deficit is still going to be far larger than originally projected this year. The following is from the Los Angeles Times. Governor Jerry Brown announced on Saturday that the state's deficit has ballooned to $16 billion, a huge increase over his $9.2 billion estimate in January. The bigger deficit is a significant setback for California, which has struggled to turn the page on a devastating budget crisis. Brown, who announced the deficit on YouTube, is expected to outline his full budget proposal on Monday in Sacramento. "This means we will have to go much further and make cuts far greater than I asked for at the beginning of the year," Brown said in the video. End of quote. During his remarks on YouTube, Governor Brown stated that California is, quote, still recovering from the worst recession since the 1930s, and he stressed that hard choices are ahead. But the California state government has already cut back in so many places. For example, back in the late 1970s, the state of California was number one in per pupil spending on education, but now California has fallen to 48th place. Unfortunately, Governor Brown doesn't believe that budget cuts alone will solve the problem. So you know what that means. Tax increases. The tax increases that California voters will be voting on in November were outlined in a recent Bloomberg article, and I quote, "Brown this week submitted more than 1.5 million signatures to place the tax measure on the ballot. It would temporarily raise the state sales tax, already the highest in the U.S., to 7.5% from 7.25%. It will also boost rates of an income starting at $250,000. The 10.3% levy of those making a million or more would rise to 13.3%, the most of any state." End of quote. Get ready to fire up the moving vans. The rest of the California economy may be falling apart, but moving companies will continue to do very well. As I mentioned here the other day, California has already experienced a net loss of approximately 4 million residents to other states over the past 20 years. If the top rate of those making $1 million or more a year hits 13.3%, you will see a lot more wealthy people leave. And thousands of businesses have left California in recent years as well. One survey found that CEOs ranked California as the worst place in the United States to do business for 7 years in a row. You would think that the state legislature would get the message, would you not? Unfortunately, they have not. California absolutely suffocates. Businesses with rules and regulations, it gets worse with each passing year. So lots of good jobs continue to leave the state. And as I told you the other day, the official rate of unemployment in California is sitting at 11%. That is almost 3 points higher than for the nation as a whole. Of course, the official numbers greatly understate the true scope of the unemployment problem, as I've discussed on a national basis many times. However you want to look at it, the reality is that California has a massive unemployment problem. Huge numbers of unemployed workers in California are about to lose their unemployment benefits. On Saturday, more than 200,000 unemployed people nationwide were dumped off the unemployment rolls. Close to half of them live in California. Instead of 99 weeks, unemployed workers in California will now only be able to collect unemployment benefits for a maximum of 79 weeks. It is estimated that a total of 93,000 people in California have suddenly lost their benefits as a result of this change. The unemployment picture in California is not getting any better. It is still incredibly difficult to find a decent job. If you are truly desperate, there are some people out there who are always hiring. These days, national security, so-called, is quite a growth industry. For example, if you are currently unemployed, you can always apply to work as an internment resettlement specialist for the National Guard. While the economy is going to pot, you can get paid to lock up other Americans that are protesting about the state of your country. Doesn't that sound like fun? Well, California is not alone. China's economy did not bottom out as expected in the first quarter. It is flirting with real trouble. Yao Wei from Société Générale says, and I quote, "A blizzard of awful data screams out for easing," end of quote. China's electricity output, watched religiously by bears, slumped in April. It is up just 0.7% over the last year. State investment in railways has fallen 44%, with an accelerating downward lurch over recent months. Highway construction has dropped 2.7%. Quote, "The data shows extreme weakness in the Chinese economy," end of quote. And that comes from Alistair Thornton from IHS Global Insight in Beijing. The Yangtze shipyards tell the tale. Caixin magazine said 8 of the 10 largest builders in the country have not received a single new order this year. Quote, "A wave of closures in the shipbuilding industry has yet to begin. A hurricane is approaching," end of quote, according to one official. Housing sales slumped 25% in the first quarter, testimony to the zeal of regulators. This has since fed into a drastic fall in new building. Mr. Thornton said floor plates under construction fell 28.3% in April. This is hardly a sideshow. The sector employs 10% of the Chinese workforce and a further 20% indirectly. Land sales provide 70% of tax revenue to local authorities and 30% to the central government. It is the fair weather financing illusion, as we saw in Ireland. The People's Bank said new loans fell from $160 billion in March to $108 billion in April. Non-conventional lending seized up altogether. Trust lending fell by 96%. Bankers' acceptance bills by 90%. Actually, all the BRICS need watching. India's industrial output fell 3.5% in March. The country seems caught in a 1970s stagflation vice. Brazil has softened too, with car sales down 15% and industrial production contracting in March. The bad loans of the banks have reached 10.3% higher than post-Lehman. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not good news. This seems to be a worldwide downturn, and I can assure you this is going to affect the United States very, very deeply indeed. Because when the United States exports dry up, those imports will keep on coming, especially in the oil market. until Americans really filled up in terms of their buying power. And I've sent out a lot of information to my email group about just that too, in terms of pretty much charts and other informational statistical material which is of interest. So prepare for difficult times ahead, ladies and gentlemen. Well, very quickly, I had an email from Steve. It just came in, Steve Pullman in, I think, Los Angeles. Steve says this: Dear Richard, thank you for all you do. At the beginning of the year, following your mentor, Mr. Granville, I started following the SQQQ. The fund was around 15. Last week, I now see the fund is around 50. Could you explain this reversal, or did I make an error? Sincerely, Steve for LA. Only half an error, Steve. You identified correctly the new price. However, it is described as a reverse split, 5-for-1, which means that the price of the stock went up 5 times and the number of stocks that you hold will go down by 5 times. So the net result to your portfolio is the same. Just a reverse stock split, Steve. That's all. Nothing to worry about or, unfortunately, to get excited about. All right. So this comes from an article by Declan McCullough in CNET News, which was sent to me over the weekend by Laura Mamadopoulos, and I thought I would give you the gist of what it says. This was last weekend, by the way. Nicholas Merrill is planning to revolutionize online privacy with a concept as simple as it is ingenious. A telecommunications provider designed from its inception to shield its customers from surveillance. Merrill, 39, who previously ran a New York-based internet provider, told CNET that he's raising funds to launch a national non-profit telecommunications provider dedicated to privacy, using ubiquitous encryption that will sell mobile phone service and, for as little as $20 a month, internet connectivity. The ISP would not merely employ every technological means at its disposal, including encryption and limited logging to protect its customers. It would also, and in practice this is likely more important, challenge government surveillance demands of dubious legality or constitutionality. Merrill is in the unique position of being the first ISP executive to fight back against the Patriot Act's expanded police powers and win. In February 2004, the FBI sent Merrill a secret national security letter, so-called, not an actual court order signed by a judge, asking for confidential information about his customers and forbidding him from disclosing the letter's existence. He enlisted the ACLU to fight the gag order and won. A federal judge barred the FBI from invoking that portion of the law, ruling it was, quote, an unconstitutional prior restraint of speech in violation of the First Amendment, unquote. Merrill's identity was kept confidential for years as the litigation continued. In 2007, the Washington Post published his anonymous op-ed, which said, quote, I resent being conscripted as a secret informer for the government, especially because I have doubts about the legitimacy of the underlying investigation, end of quote. He wasn't able to discuss his case publicly until 2010. His recipe for calyx was inspired by those 6 years of interminable legal wrangling with the feds. Take wireless service like that offered by Clear, which began selling 4G WiMAX broadband in 2009. Inject end-to-end encryption for web browsing. Add email that's stored in encrypted form, so even Calyx can't read it after it arrives. Wrap all of this up into an easy-to-use package and sell it for competitive prices, ideally around $20 a month without data caps, though perhaps prepaid for a full year. And as Merrill says, The idea that we are working on is not to be capable of complying with requests from the FBI for stored email and similar demands. A 1994 federal law called the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act was highly controversial when it was enacted because it required telecommunications carriers to configure their networks for easy wiretappability by the FBI. But even Talia says that ISPs, quote, shall not be responsible for decrypting communications if they don't possess the information necessary to decrypt, end of quote. Translation, make sure your customers own their data and only they can decrypt it. While the intimacy of the relationship between Washington and telecommunications company varies over time, it's existed in one form or another for decades. In his 2006 book titled State of War, New York Times reporter James Risen wrote, the NSA has extremely close relationships with both the telecommunications and computer industries, according to several government officials. Only a very few top executives in each corporation are aware of such relationships. End of quote. You see, that just adds to my contention that the country is turning, or has already turned, fascist, with the government in cahoots with business. Even if Calix encrypts everything, the surveillance arms of the FBI and the Bureau's lesser-known counterparts will still have other legal means to eavesdrop on Americans, of course. Police can remotely install spyware on a suspect's computer, or install key loggers by breaking into a home or office, or, as the Secret Service outlined in last year's RSA conference, they can try to guess passwords and conduct physical surveillance. That prospect doesn't exactly please the FBI. Last year, CNET was the first to report that the FBI warned Congress about what it dubbed the going dark problem, meaning when police are thwarted in conducting court-authorized eavesdropping because internet companies aren't required to build in back doors in advance, or perhaps because the technology doesn't permit it. FBI General Counsel Valerie Caproni said at the time that agents armed with wiretap orders need to be able to conduct surveillance of web-based email, social networking sites, and peer-to-peer communications technology. Yeah, right, Valerie. Well, this is a battle I'm afraid nobody is going to win, my friends. Nope, don't try. It's not going to happen. Okay, well, let's see here. Joaquin El Chapo Guzman Loera, reported head of the Sinaloa cartel in Mexico, ranked 701st on Forbes' yearly report of the wealthiest men alive and worth an estimated $1 billion. The other day officially thanked United States politicians for making sure that drugs remain illegal. According to one of his closest confidants, he said, I couldn't have gotten so stinking rich without George Bush Jr., Ronald Reagan, even El Presidente Obama. None of them have the cojones to stand up to all the big money that wants to keep this stuff illegal. From the bottom of my heart, I want to say, gracias, amigos. I own my whole empire to you. Meanwhile, as an epidemic of murderous violence rages on the Mexican-U.S. border and the American government wastes boatloads of badly needed money on the illegal drug business, which results from the prohibition laws, El Chapo is laughing all the way to the bank. Whoever came up with this whole war on drugs, one of his lieutenant reports, he said, I would like to kiss him on the lips and shake his hand and buy him dinner with caviar and champagne. The war on drugs is the greatest thing that ever happened to me, and the day they decide to end that war will be a sad one for me and all of my closest friends. And if you don't believe me, ask those guys whose heads showed up in the ice chests. Very nice. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Do just that. Well, Let me just explain, going back to some serious stuff here, let me just explain how the banks are gaming the system to stabilize housing prices. It's another scam designed to lure people back into the market so they can get fleeced one more time. Here's a clip from an article by Abigail Field, and I quote, "Phoenix Realty Track identified 6,611 bank-owned properties there. An Arizona Realty website lists only 275 for sale." Similarly, Yahoo Real Estate claims there's over 8,000 foreclosures properties in Phoenix, but Realtor.com lists less than 4,000 homes of any type. AZHomeline.net lists just over 4,000 plus 312 foreclosures and short sales. So are the foreclosures in Phoenix on the order of 300 or 6,000? Makes a wee bit of difference when the non-distressed market is about 4,000, don't you think? And by the way, Phoenix isn't the only place where banks are holding properties off the market. In Portland, Oregon, banks aren't selling 80% of the homes they own, the Oregonian reports. All the bank-owned inventory statewide represents more than a year and a half supply of houses all by itself, according to a Realty Track executive quoted in the piece. If the housing inventory is that distorted in Oregon, you may wonder what it's like in the hardest-hit states. Think about that for a minute. The banks currently own over 6,000 distressed homes in Phoenix, but only 275 of them are for sale? Why? Is it perhaps because the banks are deliberately reducing supply to create the impression that prices have hit bottom? Of course it is. The banks want people to think that it's a great time to buy. So they engineered this big Ponzi hoax to keep prices from plunging. And I'll bet you that Phoenix is just the tip of the iceberg, too. I'll bet the banks are withholding houses in every major city in the country. Millions of foreclosed homes are being stockpiled out of sight so more sheeple get led to the slaughter. Now get this from Bloomberg, and I quote, "The crash is over." Mark Sandy, chief economist from Moody's Analytics, Inc. in Westchester, Pennsylvania, said in a telephone interview yesterday, "Home sales, both new and existing, and housing starts are now off the bottom." End of quote. Well, U.S. home prices compiled by CoreLogic, a Santa Ana, California-based real estate information service, had month-over-month gains in January and February when sales of distressed properties were excluded, said Fleming, the company's chief economist, and I quote, "It's just a matter of months before we get positive year-over-year numbers in the overall index." And that was in a telephone interview from Washington. "Our data lags the reality. The turnaround is happening in the March, April, May time frame." That's from Bloomberg again. Excuse me, the crash is over? Not exactly. According to housing expert Laurie Goodman, there are roughly 8 to 10 million homes in the shadow inventory. Ladies and gentlemen, did you get that? 8 to 10 undeclared million homes in the inventory of unsold properties. Michael Olnick, another housing analyst, figures the backlog is more in the range of 9 million homes. Well, that's nice. That's halfway between 8 and 10, isn't it? Either way, that's a mighty big pig in a python. It's going to take a decade or so to get those numbers down to where prices stabilize, ladies and gentlemen. And with unemployment as high as it is and so many students underwater on their loans and baby boomers starting to downsize into smaller homes, the housing market may never bounce back. Yes, never. N-E-V-E-R. This whole house prices have hit bottom mantra is just a big lie. The banks are just fiddling the inventory so they can rip people off again. Well, there you have it. From the horse's mouth, and from mine too, my friends, from mine too. Well, what can I give you to cover the last 3 minutes of our very nice show here? Let's find out whether you heard the one about the woman who had outpatient foot surgery to remove a bone spur. She arrived at the surgery center at 8 a.m., left at 12:30, and the bill came to $37,000, not counting doctor's fees. In recovery now from sticker shock, she's waiting for her insurance company to do the tango with the clinic and figure out who owes what to whom. Or the one about the guy who has a $5,000 deductible insurance plan but has found that his medical bills are cheaper if he claims he's uninsured and pays cash. Using that strategy, an MRI scan of his shoulder cost him $350. His brother-in-law went to a nearby clinic for an MRI scan of his shoulder, was billed $13,000, and had to come up with his $2,500 deductible. Then there's the case of a Kaiser Permanente member who had a colonoscopy at an affiliated surgery center which charged $7,500. His copay was $15. Kaiser picked up $470 and the rest of the pill just went away. This is the kind of insanity that exists when medicine and medical insurance are about private profit rather than public health, when 50 million people are uninsured, when Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement don't always cover true costs, and when polarized politics prevent the kind of reasonable discussions that could lead to solutions. How about the poor soul who had a $5,000 deductible plan with Cigna and had taken his daughter to the hospital to rule out appendicitis? Nothing serious was diagnosed, and she went home to a quick recovery. Her dad got a bill for nearly $5,000 from the hospital, as well as bills from $540 from a pathologist and $309 from the doctor who treated her. Somebody said it's like going to a Laker game, paying $150 for a ticket, and later getting an additional $75 bill in the mail from Kobe Bryant. Another man's daughter needed an ultrasound for a possible gallstone. If he'd gone through to his insurance company, he would have been charged $3,200, with insurance paying $1,500, leaving him with a $1,700 bill. He chose instead to leave insurance out of the equation and pay cash instead. The price was $250. Look, I don't have much advice for people trapped in the United States having to run the gauntlet of the nightmarish healthcare system, but I will offer this up to you from my experience. When you are in hospital, you are offered up the reams of forms they make you sign. Never, ever sign the one where you undertake to pay whatever costs your insurance company refuses to pay. This happened several times to me when I lived in the United States, and they never insisted. And whoever it was in the family needed treatment always got the treatment. Obviously, you do have to pay the deductible up front. It's a horrendous situation, and until someone is brave enough to push the insurance companies out of the way, in fact, out of business, nothing will ever change in the United States, whatever you are told. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That is our show for Monday, the 14th of May. Have a wonderful week ahead, and I will be back on Friday with more of the same. Take care. Speak to you soon. Bye-bye.